Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. If you like this podcast, you should check out the full finance journey at realvision.com/RVpod to get the full view of what Real Vision is all about. A video on demand platform you can watch anywhere. Our members get daily videos and analysis, plus access to more than 3,000 videos for beginners and experienced investors alike, and live events online. You'll join the most thoughtful community in finance. More than 300,000 people who trust Real Vision to be the anchor to truth in the financial world. To get started, visit realvision.com/RVpod. Use the promo code PODCAST10 to get 10% off our essential membership for your first year. Enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, June 6, 2022. I'm Maggie Lake here with Katie Stockton, founder and managing partner at Fair Lead Strategies. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Hi, Maggie. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. I think it's such a great time to catch up with you because so many people are looking at this market action, trying to figure out how to position themselves, what direction everything's moving. It was such a sort of volatile, choppy spring. And I think people kind of want to reset here as we enter the summer. You know, we saw equities to that point rally strongly at the beginning of the day, and then they wobbled. They managed to end, you know, in positive territory with some gains. But you could kind of feel the churn, the 10-year treasury moving back above 3%, which concerned equities. We have oil at 120. So I think it's a kind of good time to sort of take stock of where we are from a technical perspective, which is where your strength is and your focus is, and try to figure out, you know, what we should do, like pull the lens back a little bit and get some perspective here. So let's start with equities, because this is the question we get over and over again. Have we reached a bottom for stocks, right? Is the bear market bottoming? And is it time to step in and start thinking about buying some of the beaten up names, or is there more pain ahead? What are you seeing with the price action?
Well, with some hindsight, we can, of course, say that we've seen a short-term bottom, at least. The relief rally has been pretty impressive for the major indices since last month. And yet, the question, of course, remains as to how sustainable this relief rally is. And I suspect that, unfortunately, as we get into the summer months, that we might see a bit more downside volatility before we actually establish a proper intermediate or long-term low. And I say that primarily based on the longer-term indicators. And it's an environment in which it's incredibly important to focus on the monthly gauges, in our opinion, because they are really setting the tone, where since late last year, we've seen a pretty meaningful loss of upside momentum. That's not news to anyone at this point, but it really accelerated at the start of this year. And with that, of course, we saw downside leadership from the mega caps, that, you know, the large cap technology names, the FANG plus Microsoft and Tesla complex. And of course, that's an environment in which it's really impossible for the major indices to work their way higher when you have their downside leadership. So that leaves us at a place where we're looking for, you know, a bottom. And yet we don't feel like it based on those monthly indicators that we have it yet. So if you look at something like a stochastic oscillator, which is an overbought oversold measure, it's not oversold yet on the monthly chart of the S&P 500. If you were to look at the monthly MACD, which is a gauge that is trend following or momentum based, that's on a fairly new sell signal. It's a little bit disconcerting, the posture of that indicator. It does tell us that we are in probably a bear market cycle within what we think is still a secular bull move. And yet, when you look at the cloud model, which is another one of our trending gauges on the chart that we've shared with you, you'll see that it's pretty well below current levels. And that creates not really a vacuum necessarily, but it does give you a sense that there is still some downside risk, perhaps. And that's where we turn our focus to the important levels in the charts.
So what levels are you looking at? I think this is really important because you get the sense that people want to step in here and start buying. I mean, if you look at some of the declines from the highs they hit, And I know that's dangerous territory to do that. But if you look at that, people say, wow, you know, this tech stock is down 30%, down 40%. Some of them are down 80% from their highs. You know, the worst has to be over. What are you looking at from the broader index? And then we'll dive into some sectors and some more detail later. But what are you looking at from the broad index in terms of downside for the S&P 500? How much more pain could we see?
Yeah, so I mean, the latest breakdown point was roughly 4,200. So that's looming nearby as potential resistance. We don't have a lot of conviction as to where this relief rally ends, but we think it'll end fairly quickly. And with that, we think we'll see another retracement, downdraft, and retest of important support, which is about 3,815 in our work based on a Fibonacci retracement level. So once that level is tested, we'll have a good sense as to whether this downtrend is going to keep hold, and we suspect it will keep hold based on those longer-term gauges. So we're looking for a breakdown, and then the secondary support becomes about 3,500. That might be the end point for it. We can't be sure. We really rely on our indicators to give us a sense of when we have that kind of long-term low at hand. So we'll wait for those gauges to turn. So it's not just a level that we're focused on as a place that we'd be adding exposure. We really want to see some stabilization. And unfortunately, that's what we don't have yet. So there, I agree with you. There's a lot of people out there looking for entries, especially in some of the technology stocks that have been so beaten up. Yet we feel like it's too early to suggest that we have something that has a shelf life to it. And we don't want to have to become traders trying to navigate these 2-3 week swings. And we fear that the market's going to be in for more of that for the summer months. And we're looking for a low to be established somewhere in the September, October timeframe. TBD as to whether that becomes an intermediate or long-term low, though. So there's still a lot of variables out there to consider. And with the higher growth arena, they are deeply oversold long-term. If you look at the same long-term gauge that we look for the S&P 500, they are now oversold. And yet we suspect this is the kind of tape that requires not like a V bottom, but rather some kind of basing phase, which means it goes sideways, perhaps even sideways to lower with a lot of volatility before finding that kind of support level, undergoing accumulation to a great degree where it actually is ready for a base breakout. So we think it's going to be more of a process than an event in terms of a low. And that's why we're not in a rush to buy even the most oversold names in the market.
Super, super important. And that kind of environment is not for everyone. If you're nimble, if you're a trader who's glued to their screens all the time and you thrive in volatility and you know how to use instruments around that, great. If that's not your cup of tea, it sounds like you got to sort of protect yourself and stay clear through some of this. A couple questions. First of all, we have Michael and Beau both asking, what happens going into VIX expiration and options expirations next week? Is that something that affects the way you look at price action? How do you take into account that sort of those sort of events?
You know, it's not really my universe, the expirations. I do know that they can influence price at a certain point in time. But my approach is more just based on the technical indicators that we're using, looking at momentum, overbought, oversold readings, especially overbought, oversold readings as it pertains to the volatility index or VIX, because that is not your normal trending instrument per se. So I know things can get pinned at various levels, but it's not really where we spend our time. But we want to make sure we're eliminating any noise that creates by looking at things that are smooth versions of the VIX or the S&P 500 or any other market kind of benchmark. As it pertains to the short-term view of the VIX has certainly pulled back already pretty notably as we've seen a relief rally in the S&P 500. It is now sort of fast approaching what we think is support around its 200-day moving average, which it is pointing higher now. And that's a reflection of the high volatility cycle that the market entered a few months ago. So we're looking for another higher low to be established by the VIX. And that would be our indication to recommend hedging strategies for our clients.
So be careful about buying the dip based on what you're seeing. What about selling into the rally? Are we in an environment where you have to, you know, the old saying, buy the dip, sell the rip. Are we in an environment where you need to be thinking about being agile and selling a bounce here?
Yeah, so to the same sort of end that we'd be hedging with the VIX upturn, we'd be selling with an S&P 500 downturn. So we're really attuned to our short-term indicators, watching for any deterioration, of which it would be more meaningful right now because the market is trending lower, as opposed to in an uptrending market, we'd be less inclined to really react to, say, a short-term overbought downturn. So we're really, I'd say, hyper-focused on these short-term gauges and unwilling to take on the risk that we think is sort of inherent to this market right now. So we are a better seller in general, and we're just taking it from a bottom-up perspective on a case-by-case basis to see how the indicators shape up.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
I want to talk sectors in a moment, but you know, in this environment, I mean, we've seen some of the headlines. I mean, the hedge fund manager has been around for a long time. I mean, this has been a really difficult market. Things are moving, or, you know, relationships that used to exist kind of breaking down, everything down. Or I understand, launched an ETF, a new ETF, to try to avoid some of the drawdowns so that people have some powder dry when there is a little bit more clarity. Talk to me a little bit about that. Well, what strategy are you using?
Well, it's called the Fairlead Tactical Sector ETF. So it is sector focused. The ticker is TAC, or TACK. And the design is to leverage sector momentum and relative strength primarily. And yet, of course, as you note, it has an asset allocation piece to it, to the strategy, in that when those sectors are not firing on all cylinders, we do see the model move into a combination of short-term treasuries, long-term treasuries, and gold. And that kind of diversification does help TAC minimize drawdowns. We've already seen that since its inception. And it's really important, as you know, to mitigate risk in this type of environment. So it's really very appropriate for what we see to be a higher risk type of tape for the major indices, where we can still leverage the sectors that are working, of which at present, that's not many of them. It does have exposure to the energy sector, for one, and that might not be a historically defensive sector, but it is a sector that is working right now. So otherwise, the sector exposure leans more defensive, utilities and staples, and then we have those sort of risk-off pieces in the treasury exposure and the gold exposure. So taken together, it's a very conservative strategy to approach U.S. equities, large cap in focus, and designed to reduce drawdowns, but also to be there when the market does come out of this type of mode. And I think that's really a problem for a lot of us. We don't have the confidence to get back into a market after, let's say, you know, 2008 type of environment. It takes us almost, you know, much longer than it should, let's put it that way, to get back to our full exposure.
Yeah. And so this does it, this senses it and does it for you and starts to reallocate as the indicator suggests that it needs to be happening. So it sounds like overweight, energy, utilities, which makes sense. Healthcare, I think, is on that list as well.
Right. So in our research, we tend to be intermediate term in focus, whereas TAC a bit more long term in focus. And intermediate term relative strength is still benefiting, of course, energy, utilities, and staples. But also we have, as overweight healthcare and materials. And those sectors have just done really well in this environment of late. And of course, there are some sort of market cap considerations to keep in mind in terms of the heavyweight positions in those sectors. Healthcare does have sort of a defensive tilt, as you know, with some of the large cap pharmaceutical exposure. But we like those sectors as relative performers. And yet in a downtrending market or a bear market cycle, unfortunately, relative performance doesn't necessarily mean you're making money. And that's the hard part, because most of us don't live in a relative world. We of course want to beat the S&P 500, but we really want to make money. And unfortunately, that relative strength really hasn't done much in terms of producing absolute gains. I think the best example is probably, if you look at that consumer staples and the influence of Walmart's disappointment, that corrective phase has been there for now a few weeks, and it's unfortunate, but these sectors don't look as good in absolute terms as you would hope.
And what are areas that people should think about being underweight or reducing exposure to if they have it already? It's funny, because I feel like some of the stuff that's been doing well in this bounce, does that hold for a more intermediate term, or is that something that you should be aware of? And if you're in it, you got in it and rode this little bounce, think about reducing exposure again. What should we be underweight?
Yeah, and I think that's the mindset, is to be selling into strength, right? Taking this gift of a relief rally from the market and remembering how it felt before the relief rally. And with the underperformance that we've seen from the technology sector in particular year to date, I think we need to respect the trend there as being lower. But within that context, of course, we are benefiting from a brief phase of outperformance that we think will ultimately recommend folks use as a selling opportunity. Not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. Communication services is another downtrending sector relative to the S&P 500, and also consumer discretionary. Some of these, again, you need to have that sort of market cap consideration. Amazon, of course, for one, is a big piece of that consumer discretionary portfolio for the sector spider funds. So that's something to keep in mind. But to us, it's a short-term oversold bounce, something to be used as a selling opportunity to avoid those downtrends in relative and also in absolute terms.
And we'll try to share some of Katie's charts after this conversation, so you can take a closer look at what she's talking about. Want to ask you about the Chinese tech sector. I know that you're watching that as one of the sectors, and we had a lot of news on that. That was one of the early catalysts today after the Wall Street Journal reported that Chinese regulators were wrapping up their investigations into Didi, the ride hailing company, this sort of Uber of China. That stock jumped, I think it was 50% at one point. I'm not sure if it closed there, but this, a lot of people taking this as a signal that maybe that government crackdown on tech is finally coming to an end. What are you seeing from a price action point of view here?
Technology, and I'd also sort of lump in the high growth names here domestically, along with these Chinese sort of tech benchmarks like a KWEB as an ETF representing the space. We featured that ETF recently as one that seemed to be turning the corner, finding a footing, maybe not from a long-term perspective, but at least from a short-term perspective. And our basis for that was simply looking at positive divergences on the latest pullback. And we started to see some breakouts above minor resistance levels like the 50-day moving averages. And the impact, of course, was favorable on our intermediate term gauges as well. So we wanted to make sure to highlight that. And we had heard in our conversations that, well, at least China had some potential positive catalysts. They were thinking more in terms of the reopening, of course. But it's something that drew our appeal to it. And of course, we've seen bullish price action there. And it does reflect short-term risk on positioning. We've seen that with the relief rally in the S&P 500. And it's hard to picture China doing very well if we enter into the next down leg here pretty soon. So we're somewhat non-committal to the counter trend move. But for now, it's working, and we really don't have a lot of sell signals to speak of. We often derive our sell signals from the DeMarc indicators, and we're not seeing a lot of sell signals on that front yet. And with these short-term breakouts, that can kind of exacerbate the momentum behind the move. So for now, it seems to be working, and I think that's helping sort of preserve the risk appetite here in the near term. We also have a little bit of a blip higher in Bitcoin for one. And we're seeing that as another source of risk appetite for investors. So when we come in the morning and we see Bitcoin up, say, 5%, well, that at least is better than the alternative for the equity market, to which it's been very highly correlated.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you bring that up, because we know that, you know, cryptocurrencies have been getting just hammered in this risk off environment. We did see that bounce today, but a lot of people still, much like other parts of the market, still really worried about the direction of cryptocurrencies, of Bitcoin. Ash Bennington spoke with one of them, Imran Laka, the founder of Option Insight, who warns that he still thinks there's risk in this space. Let's have a listen to that clip.
If ETH wants to continue underperforming, which I think it probably will in a move down towards 20K on Bitcoin, I'd be surprised if Ethereum outperforms that, given the higher beta nature of it. I think it will go down. I think this ratio will probably go down. And the kind of levels that we need to be kind of keep an eye on is 0.055, which is that old level, that old support zone, which we got to in kind of summer last year. And then below that, I've got a retracement level there at 0.048 from the entire rally from the lows made back in sort of Jan 21. So we've got some big levels there. And if to put it into some context, if Bitcoin was to get as low as 20K, then, you know, getting to 0.05 on this ratio would basically take Ethereum to 1,000, right? Which is a half from here, basically, right? So you've got to be open-minded to the idea that even though we've come off so much already, if Bitcoin's got legs to the downside still down to 20-odd K, where you'd like to think it's got quite a lot of support down there, we could well see Ethereum at 1,000.
And that full interview is available on realvision.com. And remember, on the crypto tier, it's free. You just have to sign up with your email. So you want to check that out. Now, so Katie, what are your charts telling you about, you know, where, if any, has Bitcoin bottomed? Is there support?
You know, we saw a pretty big breakdown by Bitcoin and most other cryptocurrencies, unfortunately, on their charts. And we've been watching something called the cloud model, the same model that you saw on the S&P 500 chart. This is on the weekly chart, however, and it was penetrated not that long ago. And that essentially affirmed what we already suspected, which was that, you know, there's been a very significant loss of long-term momentum. You can see it in the monthly gauges. You know, the monthly MACDs are pointing lower. We have seen some improvement in intermediate term momentum, but we suspect that, like for the equity market, it should be somewhat fleeting here, because when you see a breakdown of the nature that we saw, it leaves a lot of resistance in its wake. So what was formerly support often becomes resistance. We also have issues in terms of, let's say, the 50-day moving average, the former support going back a few months. So there's a lot of reasons to suspect that in the sort of mid 30,000 range for Bitcoin, there is pretty strong resistance, and then you have to respect that long-term downside momentum. So we do think that we'll see a retest of the lows. We have sort of a bullish short-term bias, but more bearish intermediate and long-term bias in our research.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Is there a support level or, you know, a downside target? Mucheer is asking about, you know, whether there is any buying opportunity or more downside. You see more downside on an intermediate term, but is there a level that starts to look interesting to you?
The support that we've been watching to date is around 27,200, and it's based primarily on a Fibonacci retracement level. And it wasn't really a widely followed level, and yet it did provide support on the last downdraft. So that did, to us, emphasize its importance. Now, we think that after this relief rally, which we think will persist here in the very near term, that Bitcoin is at risk of a retest and even a breakdown below that level. And then you just start to talk about, unfortunately, I don't want to scare anyone, but we're talking sub 20,000 as next support. So there's really a lot of room to secondary support if that 27,200 level is broken. So we of course, don't want to see that. But what's good about these support levels and having defined levels in mind is that you can always have basically a mental stop loss by knowing where that support should come in. And if it doesn't, well, then you can at least, you know, decide that risk is perhaps heightened.
Super, super important in this environment to have some parameters, right? Have some guardrails, some things that you want to be watching, especially given all the pain that people have endured. I think that's really critical. We've got a couple of questions coming in from Greg and from Michael about credit markets. Michael, specifically, what is major resistance on the 10-year, 30-year?
Yeah, so I look primarily at 10-year treasury yields, and the major resistance is very widely followed, I would say around 3.25. It's based on the 2018 high. We've already seen what we consider to be a long-term reversal higher there. And by long-term, we're talking like multi-year, because it was a multi-decade downtrend channel that it lifted from. And yet that resistance is quite strong, and we've already seen it stall or, you know, sort of create a loss of upside momentum behind treasury yields. And we actually think that's going to stay with the treasury market here, potentially even for a few months based on our indicators. I referenced at one point the DeMarc indicators. And in those DeMarc indicators on the monthly charts, especially, we are seeing some signs of exhaustion that are not major, but they support about 4 months or so of sort of sideways digestion for both yields and treasury bond prices, right? So we're looking for that. We also are seeing some of the same from the dollar index. So we're looking for the dollar, which has seen a very strong uptrend, of course, to also get into this kind of backing and filling digestion mode for a few months as the equity market makes another down leg.
You know, it's interesting that the dollar has been just so persistently strong. And if it's in this consolidation period, does that mean that we've sort of hit the highs, or could it just form another base there and move higher? I think Andreas and Raul were talking about this last Friday, and some concern that it could sort of have another leg higher after that. And of course, there are loads of implications for many parts of the financial system, the global financial system, if you have an overly strong dollar, the dollar wrecking ball, right, is what people refer to it as. Can you tell yet, is there any indication of whether that consolidation is the high or whether it could set up for another move higher?
Well, I think we always have to assume that the prevailing trend will continue. That's sort of a technical, I guess, mantra here. So we do assume that eventually the consolidation that we're expecting here in the coming months will resolve higher, but not to minimize the strength of the resistance level that is being tested by the dollar index and on the flip side by the euro against the dollar. These are very key levels that are in play. They've been in place for, you know, a decade or even more. And so they're very strong resistance and they're in also support for the euro levels. So we think that this is a natural place for us to see some consolidation, digestion, if you will. And of course, it could also reverse, but we'll have to sort of take that as it comes. We can't predict that, but our assumption is that it will ultimately break out to the upside. And then, of course, implications of that could be macro in nature.
Yeah. I want to squeeze in one more question from Jose, and that is, what levels are you looking at for the NASDAQ 100? He was super specific about that. And of course, again, you know, some of those mega cap tech names are leading. We know Amazon was in the news that had its 20-to-1 stock split, but we saw strength in Apple and, you know, some of those names. What are you looking at for the NASDAQ 100 from a level perspective?
That's right. I mean, everybody's kind of watching that too, of course, because it really does reflect the FANG stocks and their relative strength. So we have seen some underperformance aligned with, versus the S&P 500 aligned with the underperformance from the technology sector more broadly. So it's the tech heavy NASDAQ 100 index. Long-term support there is roughly 10,600. So of course we don't want to see that level, but we're going to be very, very respectful of any additional breakdowns that we see. Both the NASDAQ 100 and also the S&P 500, if you take a look at their weekly bar charts, you can see something that looks a bit like a head and shoulders top. We're not really big into price patterns, but it's essentially a derivation of support and resistance levels. And both indices have completed these head and shoulders tops. So that basically enhances the bearish cycle that we think is underway. And we're not using those as a derivation for the price targets, but the support levels do suggest that there's still a lot of risk.
Katie, this was such great timing to get this perspective from you today. So appreciate you coming on. And as we said, we'll put some of those charts out so you can sort of, you know, zoom in on them and really see what Katie's talking about, that some of the trends she's seeing. But great way to kick off the week and give us another aspect for a lot of these markets that we need to take into consideration as we try to protect our money, right? Make money, that's hopefully, right, but certainly protect it and not get sort of, you know, sucked into perhaps trying to time a bottom here. And especially from what you say, and it sounds like there's a lot of reason to still be very cautious. So totally appreciate you today, Katie. Thanks so much.
Of course, Maggie. Take care.
Yeah. And thanks to all of you. Great questions as always. I'm going to be back here same time tomorrow with Tony Greer. So come with all those questions. In the meantime, take care and good luck out there.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.